You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the 50th episode of the My Senior Horse Podcast. We have a passion for senior horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules, and we share information from expert guests who can help us learn more about caring for our senior equids. In this episode, we're going to talk about foot changes with laminitis with Dr. Andrew Van Epps. I'm your host, Kim Brown, an editor for My Senior Horse. We launched the global My Senior Horse brand in partnership with Linda Mars and Mars Horse Care in mid-2024. We offer many ways to get information on older equids, including this biweekly podcast, articles on the MySeniorHorse.com website, videos, and so much more. Our guest for this episode is a professor in the section of large animal internal medicine, and he is the Dean W. Richardson Endowed Chair of Equine Disease Research at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine's New Bolton Center. Dr. Van Epps is an internal medicine expert whose research goal is to identify the key mechanisms that lead to different forms of laminitis in order to develop effective strategies for prevention and treatment. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Van Epps.
Thanks, Kim. It's great to be here.
Well, laminitis is terrifying to horse owners. Dr. Van Epps, can you explain to us what goes on in a horse's hoof during the early process of laminitis, which is a stage that horse owners might not even notice?
Yeah, I guess what we are focusing on in our research and what we are really interested in is identifying what that earliest change is that occurs before they become clinically apparent. So before horses become lame, there's often activity going on inside the foot that is kind of key to what causes progression of the condition. Now, it depends a little bit on what the underlying cause is, but I think we'll focus on high insulin today because that's by far the most common cause or underlying reason for laminitis in horses and ponies and donkeys. With high insulin, the excess insulin in the blood seems to trigger the cells within the lamellae. The lamellae are specialized epithelial cells or epidermal cells, a bit like skin. And those cells are responsive to signaling, growth factor type signaling, which is what insulin seems to trigger in them. And what it does is it tells them to modify their attachments. It tells them or encourages them to divide, and it also causes those cells to lose their mechanical integrity and stretch. And that's one of the first things that occurs with high insulin-associated laminitis. Those lamellae that are normally suspending the bone fully within the hoof capsule lose a bit of that suspensory function and come a bit more elastic. And if the weakness is profound enough, then they can actually exceed their kind of mechanical threshold and start to fail in different areas. And that seems to be what causes the pain initially in acute laminitis. But even mild pain can sometimes go unnoticed. And I think horses in paddocks on soft ground can have some mild foot soreness that isn't very apparent. And when you take them onto harder ground and you look at them very carefully, it's something that you can actually appreciate much more. And so what we commonly see in horses is that we see them present for their first episode of laminitis, and we maybe take some x-rays and have a look. And more often than not, there's evidence that they've had bouts before that have gone unnoticed. And I'd say, you know, that is probably more than 60 or 70% of cases that we see. So bottom line is that you probably can't really rely on them becoming overtly lame to catch this problem early. We need to look prior to that, we need to screen animals for risk.
Mars Equestrian, a sponsorship division of Mars Incorporated, is dedicated to highlighting the Mars brands, such as Buckeye Nutrition, Spillers, Antech Diagnostics, Sound Imaging, Royal Canin, Pedigree, Nutro, and many more in the equestrian world. Whether it's through nutrition, veterinary care, or education, our purpose is to create a better world for horses, pets, and the people who love them. So how do we as horse owners screen these animals for risk, or what do we talk to our veterinarians about? For example, I've got a gelding that's got PPID, so I know he has a greater risk for laminitis. So what about some of these horses that we might not think of? What are some of the risk factors we might want to notice as horse owners?
Well, I think we need to recognize that screening for metabolic disease is kind of an essential part of just regular health monitoring in horses and ponies, particularly as they start to get older, but also in their younger years. So, you know, just as we might do routine health exams, we might do vaccinations once a year, it's definitely going to help a lot in preventing this problem and early identification if we add metabolic testing to that kind of routine annual health checkup. And, you know, in horses and ponies that aren't at necessarily high risk, so animals that haven't got any other signs, they're young animals, they're thoroughbreds or quarter horses, etc., that aren't necessarily, from a breed standpoint, maybe aren't necessarily high risk. It might be as simple as just monitoring their insulin, monitoring maybe some of these adipokines, adiponectin and leptin are the two that we tend to look at in horses. And then in older animals that are above the age of 10, it's also worth screening them for PPID, for Cushing's disease, using their ACTH. But if we do that, then we can identify animals that are at higher risk of developing laminitis, and then we can take steps to, sometimes it's worth radiographing feet of horses and ponies that might have underlying endocrine disease but aren't necessarily lame, to get a baseline on them. And then we can also, if we identify higher risk, we can increase the sort of, we can make some management changes, and we can increase the frequency of monitoring to make sure that they don't get into trouble.
Well, after this first phase where we were talking early on about the first time a horse gets laminitis, and you usually see that things have been going on before, but once you have noticed and there is clinical evidence of laminitis, what are some of the next changes that might occur if the risk factors go unattended?
In terms of changes, gross changes to the feet, or
changes to the feet. If the horse has had laminitis, and you've noticed there's subtle changes, what would the next changes be? They can become more severe, or do the feet get better? What goes on in a horse's foot?
So after a sort of an initial bout of laminitis, they can certainly get better, and they frequently do get better clinically, so the lameness can resolve. And, you know, sometimes with that loss of suspensory function, what we see in the early stages on an x-ray is we see that the sort of distance between the bone and the inner hoof wall is increased. It's measurably increased. And, you know, if it's a well-controlled, mild to moderate bout, that there's the possibility that will decrease again, and the bone will kind of return to its normal position as the lamellae regain their function. More often than not, we are left after each bout of laminitis, whether it be a clinically evident one or whether it be one that's simmering under the surface, we're left with some ongoing damage. And what we tend to see is some progressive displacement of the bone away from the inner hoof wall, and classically, the bone rotates away from the inner hoof wall in kind of a palmar direction, and that's because of the mechanics of the horse foot. The hole of the deep flexor tendon and the position of the digital cushion mean that that bone has a tendency to rotate away because the strain on the dorsal lamella is greater than in other places. And so that's a classic, I guess, chronic laminitis finding. The other thing that we see is the bone itself starts to remodel in response to the early inflammation within the lamellae themselves. And now that we have things like PET scan, we can see that that occurs actually right from the beginning in a lot of these animals. And it's progressive with time, and you get resorption of bone primarily, but also some remodeling, so some laying down of new bone. And so the shape and appearance of the bone changes on x-ray with time. And it's also one of, even with very subtle laminitis, it's one of the earliest things that we can see on x-ray is some of this change in the contours of the bone. And we do feel like that these changes in the bone are important to their soundness. They're an important contributor to lameness. And, you know, particularly in athletic horses that might have mild kind of subclinical laminitis that's not that severe, it can still limit their performance in the long term.
And most people think that, you know, oh my gosh, the horse has laminitis. This is the end. We have to put it down. And there are cases where that is, where the bone can come through the bottom of the hoof and the horse can still survive. So where do you know as an owner working with your veterinarian to say, okay, that's enough, or gosh, we really need to go on with this. This horse can survive.
Yeah, there's a real spectrum. I mean, laminitis, it's a little bit like arthritis. You know, you can have some very mild arthritic change in a joint and still win a Kentucky Derby. Or you can have arthritis so severe that you're unable to bear load on the limb. And laminitis is similar. So, you know, we pick up very subtle laminitis, particularly using advanced imaging like PET scanning, before it even causes any overt lameness or any change in the position of the bone within the hoof capsule. We can see it on some of this imaging. And that progresses right through to very obvious changes. And I guess the important thing is not to paint all laminitis with the one brush. The prognosis and for athletic soundness and also for life depends on many factors with laminitis. It depends on the severity of the insult. It depends on the degree of displacement of the bone. It depends on the horse's own tolerance of pain and the degree of lameness. It depends on sometimes the size of the animal. Full size, 1,000-pound plus horses are much less tolerant to damage to the lamellae than a pony, for instance. And so it can depend on a lot of these factors, and also the speed of progression. So for vets looking at laminitis, they're taking a lot of these factors into account and trying to give a prognosis. But I guess what we've noticed recently, particularly with insulin associated laminitis, is that even fairly profound rotation and displacement of the bone can sometimes be reversed with tight insulin control. And so even when we have a sort of 5-10 plus degrees of rotation in some of these feet, this can be reversed with metabolic control. And obviously it's always worth erring on the side of prevention and stopping it in the first place. But with insulin, because of the nature of the lesion, it's a little bit different to laminitis that you get from systemic inflammatory disease or from bearing too much load on a limb supporting the laminitis. Those two, the lesion tends to be much more of a separation with permanent damage. Whereas with insulin, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, there's more preservation of the microstructure of the lamellae, and they tend to stretch more than separate. And so, and then they also tend to produce a lot of what we call cap horn, which is a kind of abnormal keratinized horn, which contributes to this this rotated wedge. And so some of these things are reversible with tight enchilon control. So I'd say, you know, we as veterinarians, since we've gained new tools to better control, to better diagnose and control enchilon dysregulation in recent years, I think we're becoming more and more surprised at the outcomes that we can get by controlling the underlying problem in some of these cases.
Well, that's great news for us. Is there anything else that you would like to add about the foot changes that are occurring in laminitis and what horse owners should know?
Yeah, the things that people should look for, I think, you know, one is you know, taking note of the shape of the feet and the rings of the feet. So growth rings are pretty normal horse feet. The key is normal growth rings should be kind of at equal distance apart as they go down the feet at the toe compared to the heel. Now, what we tend to see with laminitis is growth rings that diverge towards the heel. So the rings are further apart towards the quarters and the heel, and they're closer together towards the toe, the dorsal part of the foot. And you know, I think if owners are seeing those sorts of changes, they should probably talk to the veterinarian about maybe getting some screening x-rays and some metabolic testing. I think that's one of the more reliable signs that's fairly specific to laminitis.
Well, that's a great tip that horse owners can take out to the field or in the barn. Thank you so much, Dr. Van Epps, for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Ken.
And for our listeners, we encourage you to sign up for our weekly newsletter and be the first to get information from MySeniorHorse.com. And if you have any topics about senior horses, ponies, donkeys, or mules that you would like to have discussed in this podcast or covered in the content of MySeniorHorse.com, send an email to me at kbrown, that's the letter K, Brown, at equinenetwork.com. Thanks for joining us today. Take care of yourselves and your senior equids.